Hi folks, welcome to the next edition of Serverless Crack with myself, Dave Anderson. I'm author and contributor at the Serverless Edge and technical fellow at Bizarre Voice.
Hi everyone, Mark McCann, architect at Globalization Partners and author and contributor at the Serverless Edge.
Hey, Michael Royley, architect with GP and contributor with Service Edge.
So we are now post AWS reInvent. I spent the week running around like a maniac, talking loads of people, seeing loads of stuff. So we thought we'd do must do like a post-invent. What do we call it? I know we did a pre-invent. This is a post-invent. But as usual, the conference was nuts. There was about like 60,000 people at it in Las Vegas, lasted the whole week. I think they've got 8 hotels. If you try and book sessions in all the hotels, it's a hard station because you end up running around the place. So it's really is a glorified networking event, what it is. But I always think it's really interesting to see the almost like the tone of the themes that AWS are talking about, because you can, when you sit back and see their kind of narrative, you can see how the organization's evolving. I thought we'd maybe touch on that. I know you both were watching it from afar. What was your impressions of what they were talking about?
No, it was good. It was, and I think watching it from afar and watching it from you almost can get to see the way it's moving, right? And you're not so much in the
You've probably seen
walking.
more than I did.
Yeah.
Was going to say, Mark, that we'd seen more than you did.
Yeah. But yeah, I think a lot of it is, this is the next generation of cloud, the next generation. I think we talked about that in our post session. I think it's much more focused on delivering value quickly, right? Much more about, removing a lot of the barriers to business adoption and business enablement. So yeah, I think that was good. There was lots of great announcements, lots of good stuff, but I think, yeah, focusing on that time to value and removing a lot of the impediments to that value have been coming through, which is good.
I think one thing I thought was very interesting, there's definitely a more, well, there is always a customer focus, but there's much more, I would say, a solution focus. I think a lot of the focus from AWS before has been migration, migration, migration. Let's get people moved. There was a really interesting article in SiliconANGLE. It's called AWS Chief Adam Spilsky Hints at the Next Gen Cloud. It came out, I think, on the first day of the event. And he basically talks about he talks about two things. He talks about the classic cloud versus the next gen cloud. He talks about how the AWS is expanding and growing up. So there's much more focus on solutions. And he talks about the classic cloud for infrastructure as a service and the platform of the cloud. And then really next gen is where you get ISVs and true cloud, I think what he called it. And it's a lot about really using the cloud to kind of power your kind of business journey, which is exactly the way we talk about it in the value flywheel effect. The phrases we've been using is legacy cloud and modern cloud, but it really struck me because the way he was talking about cloud was pretty much exactly how we've been talking about the cloud in the book. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, I think that was when I'd seen that, it did bring my thoughts back to like a previous podcast we had done on that, the difference between the sort of traditional classic use of cloud and then the how organizations, need to transition from that into modern. So, I mean, yeah, I read that article. That was an awesome kind of write up on it. And it does kind of tie into that. And I think what we talk about there in terms of the flywheel effect and leveraging the modern cloud to build that momentum into, business focus, getting business value as quickly as possible. I think you're starting to see it in a lot of, there's a lot of announcements there that actually are in and around that and shows that that's what they're backing, which is great. Like, so yeah, that was really positive to see. And it's good that we're in alignment with that.
Yeah, I think
And there's a
one of the big things we talk about is creating that environment for success so that you can deliver that value quickly. And a lot of the capabilities and announcements were around removing developer friction or enabling developers to go faster in a better way. And
Yeah.
even like from the getting that value, better observability, better telemetry, better metrics so you can actually see how you're going was good to see.
Yeah. And even the
Makes
way I
sense.
think of it as well is a lot of the It's when you Google cloud, you see all the cloud things like, you know, compute and storage and all that kind of what I call those low level primitives. And AWS, they're clearly market and leader at that. If you want compute, you just get it from AWS. So that's been cloud for the last, like, you know, 15 years. But this next generation cloud is about, I need a business capability. And for me, I get really excited, like, but I thought it was interesting last year when Goldman Sachs brought out their financial services data cloud, which is basically, here's a bunch of financial service data that you can just get. So you're not getting, it's not a data lake, it's actual a financial capability you can get. So it's much more than SaaS. It's almost like a business capability. And again, when you do your worldly mapping correctly, all the cloud primitives, you shove them off to the right, they're not a commodity. And then you look at what's the business capability I need, and then how
Never
can I
thought.
build on top of that? And that's exactly what the value flywheel effect is. You're looking at your business strategy for what do you need to use versus what do you need to build, and then use your technical strategy to build the right thing. You're not stuck using something that someone else is going to expose as a SaaS. So I thought that was super powerful, like, and there's a whole dialogue around this. I would definitely have a look at that article in the SiliconANGLE where he explains it in great detail.
Yeah, I think the rise in serverless, right, throughout the keynotes, containers weren't really mentioned at all, I don't think.
Somebody said that the container wasn't mentioned once. Now, serverless was mentioned a few times, but basically you can see they're in their mind, they're kind of moving beyond those, some of those terms.
Yeah, I think everything is moving asynchronous, everything is moving event driven, and I think now the environment, the primitives, the building blocks are in place to do event-driven architecture properly in a way that the teams can actually embrace it and understand it and do it in a really well-architected way. I think a lot of those things were hard to do in the past. I think things like event bridge pipes, step functions maturity, it's really enabling teams to deliver event-driven architectures in an easier way and a much better way.
I almost seen it as you could almost see like a consolidation of those core primitives. Like these are the primitives that we're really, really good at. Now we're going to open up the solution space to help, you know, effectively customers do interesting things with them. And you can see that also with partnerships with other big companies like some Mongo, et cetera, and Cloudflare. So you definitely see a more ecosystem there. But I think what was really cool was Werner, the CTO Werner Vogels, spent about the first probably third of his talk talking about EDA, event-driven architecture. Made a big deal of it. Quite a funny video of going to a cafe and getting a synchronous burger and chips. Trying to end up making a chip at a time. So it was very funny. Talking about being a synchronous world versus an asynchronous world. But I mean, as we've been talking about, serverless is basically turning into EDA. So that was a massive endorsement of and we also had EDA Day in London back in the 1st September with some of the AWS serverless dudes. So it was great to see his focus on that.
Yeah, and again, and even tying that back in, like, I mean, that EDA, you know, whenever you're trying to describe what serverless is and that serverless mindset to, you know, executives or teams, it's effectively what you're describing a lot of times as EDA, you know, and so.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, well, that when you and I wouldn't say I knew this, but I could see it and didn't understand what was happening. You can see people talking about serverless but not EDA, and you're thinking they're not getting it.
No.
It's not about just implementing a function. You know what I mean? It's about thinking about the event that kicks off a piece of compute or whatever. So describing it like EDA, but then having the tools to do it properly. Like back in the day when we were trying to do EDA years ago, the tool set was terrible. But now it's far better.
Yeah, I think the functions are rapidly going away, right? The lambdas are usage are going away. We're going from more direct connections. You're going to more composition and orchestration directly from service to service, right? And things like step functions really link that together. So it's if you're just focusing on lambda, you're missing the bigger picture here.
But it's
And then
funny.
even go ahead, sorry.
No, it's funny. And sorry, Dave, I was just going to say on that, like, it's funny that I think even in that talk was the amount that he mentioned, was it the distributed, well, Amazon's original, what was it, their distributed computing manifesto
Oh yeah.
and what it was kind of built on and but it makes sense, you know, and even when you look at the scale which these guys have got to, you know, it's the same principles apply, you know, yeah, it was, I thought it was very good.
It's funny, I heard at some point I heard someone say that you need to think about that distributed way for your service is going to be called a trillion times. You're like, ooh, hurt your head. So, I mean, yeah, I thought that was really good. But then go back to the book. I mean, we've been talking about EDA quite a bit and that way of thinking with like event storming and that way of thinking about how you build your applications and the whole socio-technical thing. It's not just the architecture, but there's also a bunch of announcements that backed up some of the things we've been saying in the book, especially around the developer enablement and stuff. But probably the key one being Code Catalyst, which is there was a lot of criticism in AWS in previous years about poor developer experience. So with Code Catalyst, definitely a big move to try and kind of make that more seamless, which it's still early, like, but it looks pretty interesting.
No, it's great, and it's stitching together a number of things that have evolved over the last while. But it's really that, can you enable product teams to rapidly deliver value in a way that doesn't blow up 2 months down the road, right? So it's gonna I'm like interested to see how that evolves, but it really is an accelerator for, teams coming onto the cloud, teams coming into serverless, being able to, in a frictionless way,
I was going to
deliver.
say that's what I was going to look for was frictionless developer experience, isn't it? It's really in the book. It's really under our next best action and sort of
Next
key
best
tenant under
action.
that.
Yeah, completely. And it was nice though as well the way that is more like an ecosystem, because they're linking out to Slack and GitHub and other tools. They're not making you use AWS tools, which will boost the success rate.
I think something we've been talking about for a while and been keeping an eye on is cloud IDEs, right? Doing your actual development in the cloud as well. There's no need for a big heavyweight machine anymore, with Cloud9 and other sort of cloud IDEs.
And then well-architected was well represented, which is our fourth phase, our long-term values. Lots of being well-architected is not going away.
No.
We're continuing to build that out and build it into things. And the whole idea of patterns as well and having these kind of blueprints and accelerators was also very, very much in effect.
Yeah, you're seeing the term well-architected being mentioned in all the talks in some way or shape or form. How do we deliver a well-architected solution? It's permeating throughout everything that AWS are doing, so it's great to see, and I hope to see more maturity in that. So ideally, a lot of the patterns, a lot of the examples they have should be well-architected examples and patterns. So I'm hoping that we see more adoption of that. But there's a fine line to walk there. You want people to understand and get going quickly, but you also want to make sure that the day two activities are taken care of, and well-architected helps with that.
And then we had our interesting announcements. You had Event Bridge pipes, which I thought it was deep. Takes its inspiration from the Unix pipe, which spent many years back in the day then about with. So that was cool. Nice connections between events and Events Bridge.
Yeah, I think just removing operational burden and complexity, and allowing you to scale without really worrying about it too much. Yeah, I think there's been lots of good blogs about pipes that we're not going to do here, but it's another great capability that allows you to do massive event-driven architectures at scale without having to worry about the underlying operational sort of aspects, which is great.
But
And on
the
that, I mean, sorry, there was lots of kind of stuff around like reducing operational burden, making the lower level things less complicated, which is also good.
And even security and stuff as well, I think was well represented, like the verified permissions and like Mark, I know you were all over that one as well. That's an interesting one to see where they're going with that. I know it's out in pilot at the minute or
Yeah,
but
I think that'll probably have as big an impact as anything, I think. Being able to, manage those fine-grained permissions and, do authentication and authorization properly is a big deal, especially for your custom apps. So most companies at a certain scale have their own custom-built version of this. So there's probably lots of organizations looking at it and going, "Hey, we have something like that. We'd be a custom-built and spend a lot of time and effort in." There's an evolutionary step that they can easily take now to start to embrace some of these things, which is great.
Yeah, but that's okay. But you just need to be acknowledge you're ahead of the curve and have the courage to delete your custom built solution.
Deleting code is a good idea, right?
Yeah, it's okay. It just means you were early. And then you'd the bunch of step function stuff out, which is cool. But I must say I particularly like the snap start, which is the we know a few people who are working on that. It's the ability to drop large Java applications in the Lambda. And the performance time is through the roof. So there's a lot of stuff there around. If you have a Spring Boot application, you can drop a to an average Spring Boot application in the Lambda, and you will get similar performance, but way cheaper to run.
Yeah, and it's not just like Java. There will be other languages as well, but that snapshotting a virtual machine effectively and then making that available on demand is a big deal. There's some caveats to it, but I think it's another one of those addressing the myths around cold starts and you can't use Lambda for high performance workloads. It's nonsense. It's just another nail in the coffin of some of those old myths.
It's definitely interesting from a perspective if you do have these large framework oriented kind of services, could you just leverage that for ephemeral compute, you know, and
not completely
where it just opens up maybe an option that wasn't there this time a couple of weeks ago.
Totally.
So I think that's really interesting about that one. I think that could be a game changer. It'd be interesting to see how that one unfolds over the year, you know.
Yeah, that's a really good one if you're looking to move and get on the service quickly. And I was talking to the architect working at, the guy called Mark Sales, and I think he's got a couple of talks out. If you look up reInvent, AWS Events YouTube channel, I think there's some stuff about that.
Yeah, he has a great talk and also reference sort of example as well that I've been sort of sharing around in our context. And again, I think it's another good on-ramp. It removes another one of those barriers for enterprises who maybe haven't embraced serverless. That's another way of getting you into the serverless mindset. It's great.
And speaking of which, I mean, I suppose I was talking to a good few people, like, but the message I was hearing loud and clear is a lot of big enterprises and large companies that think, right, we've moved to cloud now, grand. Now we need help doing the next piece. In fact, they need help creating their value flywheel. It's like, we've done the move. Now we need to go on to that next stage of modernization, next gen, whatever you want to call it. So good news for the book, because that's what it tells you how to do. Lots of nice feedback as well around the book and people getting their first copies, which was cool. And didn't get any cheeky comments yet. But I spoke to a lot of people who were trying that, or like serverless, like, you know, transformation, trying to create that value flywheel. And there's definitely a lot of demand for more advice and guidance and stories of how other companies have done this.
Yeah.
So that's why I think that's interesting.
Yeah, I think it's the ecosystem has never been better for applying the value flywheel effect now, right? A lot of the challenges we had in the past have sort of been addressed. So it should be easier for people adopting it now to make progress. Yeah.
Well, that's actually, I was talking to someone yesterday about it, and they were saying, like, how do we get started? And I was kind of saying, well, listen, if you started 8 years ago, there's a lot of hard yard, but starting now, it's easier because there's a lot of the challenges have been resolved. So if you just go in fresh now with the modern tool set, then, you know, a lot of the underlying things have been solved. So you just need to focus on your business domain and your own teams.
Yeah, like when in the past when we were saying you want to be well architected serverless first, people might have looked at us a little bit funny, but that's starting to permeate throughout all of AWS now. So it's a lot more of an accepted sort of term that people understand what that means. So you'll have a lot less inertia to going well architected and going serverless first now than we had 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, serverless first, not scary anymore.
No.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of companies coming out now and they do have their value flywheel effect, you know, and there's lots of evidence for it and there's lots of good examples, you know, and it's, you know, and I think it's, you know, with the book, we're describing that and, you know, it's there. So never a better time to start. So
there you go. And just to remind you, the book was released yesterday in the UK and last week over in the States. Be out right now in different regions. So, order from your favorite bookseller. So that's the crack. Reinvent was a good laugh. But great to see everyone again. I think we're back to kind of pre-pandemic levels. But I think everyone came back sick, which was a drag. Like, but it was definitely good to see everyone. So have a look at the blog at theserverlessedge.com, at Twitter at serverlessedge, and our YouTube channel. And thanks very much.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye, everybody.